Falling chunks of rock had crushed it, and the creature's whip-like legs lay askew as if it had tried to flail the boulders aside. Duel strutted over to the carcass.
"That, my friends, seems to be the thing that creates the spice itself. It's the first such creature we've encountered, but there must be others deep in the tunnels. We're getting a xenobiologist to study it. The bulk of its body seems to be made of glitter stem itself, and the strands we pull from the tunnel walls are what it uses as a web."
Duel stopped short of actually touching the fallen monster. The guard in charge of dissection joined them. He nudged one of the sharp crystalline legs with his boot. "We want to see if we can extract raw glitter stem from the web sac and spinnerets in the dead body." Duel bobbed his head up and down.
"Wouldn't that be something? Absolutely pure glitter stem."
Lando nodded noncommittally. Luke, playing his part, fished around for more information. "So how does this affect your safety record? Did this creature prey on any of the miners?"
"Yes, it killed several, including the shift boss and my assistant, the ones I told you about." "How many bodies have you found so far?"
Duel asked the guard. 3 fresh ones and 2 old ones, and we think it killed a bunch more. There's a big Wookiee and some other prisoners still unaccounted for." Duel scowled at the guard, but quickly regained his false smile. Luke felt cold upon hearing the news. Of course, there was no way of knowing whether the Wookiee in question was Chewbacca. The Empire had taken a great many slaves from the Wookiee homeworld of Kashyyyk, and many survivors could well have been shipped off to Kessel. Luke met Lando's gaze, and the other man shook his head ever so slightly.
"Very interesting," Lando said.
"Come on, there's more to see,"
Duel said as he strode back to the floating cars.
"I hope all this is impressing you."
"Certainly is," Lando said. "You have an amazing operation here, Maruth." Luke remained silent. All day long he had been straining his senses, searching for some echo of Han or Chewbacca, but he had found nothing. Plenty of others wallowed in pain and misery here, but Luke found no hint of the ones he sought. Han Solo might never have reached Kessel, and he was certainly no longer there. At least, not alive. 19. The Admiral's quarters on an Imperial-class Star Destroyer were spacious and functional, and they had been Dala's only home for more than a decade. Year after year, she operated in a vacuum, alone as always, following Tarkin's parting instructions with no further input from the Grand Moff. The great distortion of the Maw itself blacked out all external Holonet transmissions. Her fleet had been isolated, and the crew on her 4 Star Destroyers had fallen into a routine, but Dala did not relax her grip. She was afraid to wonder about events outside in the galaxy, confident at least that she could count on the Empire with its unbending rules, sometimes cruel, but always clear-cut. But now, in her turmoil, she was glad her quarters were sealed and locked, quiet and empty, so no one could see her like this. It would ruin her image entirely. Everything had been cut and dried before the interrogation of the new prisoners. Dala punched up the recording and watched it again, though she had already replayed the sequence a dozen times. She could mouth the words as the prisoner spoke them, but this tiny image could not convey the impact she had felt when watching him firsthand. The man, Han Solo, sat strapped in a nightmarish convoluted chair with steel tubes and wires and piping tangled around him. The gadgetry looked sharp and ominous. Most of it served no purpose other than to increase the prisoner's terror, and in that it proved effective. On the recording, Dala stood by Commander Kratos, the captain of her flagship, the Gorgon. She could smell the prisoner's fear, but his demeanor was full of bluster and sarcasm. He would crack easily.
"Tell us where you come from," Dala said. "Is the Rebel Alliance crushed yet? What has happened in the Empire?"
"Go kiss a hut," Solo snapped.
Dala stared woodenly at him for a moment, then shrugged, nodding to Kratos. The commander punched a control pad, and one of the metal bars across the restraining chair hummed. The muscles in Solo's left thigh began to spasm, jittering. His leg bounced up and down. The spasms grew worse. He had a puzzled, confused look on his face, as if he couldn't understand why his own body was suddenly behaving so strangely. The involuntary seizure clenched the muscles under his skin. Dala smiled. Kratos adjusted one of the controls, and Solo flinched as the muscles along the left side of his rib cage also began spasming,
tightening his body, but the chair would not let him move. Solo fought back an outcry. The seizures were not so painful as they were maddening. Dalla had found that a most effective interrogation technique was simply to induce an unrelenting facial tic that made the eyes blink over and over and over again for hours without end.
"Tell us about the Empire," she said again.
"The Empire is in the garbage masher," Solo said. Dalla could see the whites of his eyes as Solo tried to look down at his rebellious leg muscles.
"The Emperor is dead. He died in the explosion of the second Death Star."
Dalla and Kratos both snapped their heads up.
"Second Death Star? Tell me about it."
"No," Solo said.
"Yes," Dalla said.
Kratos adjusted another button. The bars in the labyrinthine chair hummed, and Solo's right hand began twitching, his fingers scrabbling against the smooth metal, jittering and shaking. Solo tried to look everywhere at once.
"The second Death Star?"
Dalla asked again. "It was still under construction when we set off a chain reaction in its core. Darth Vader and the Empire were on board." Solo resisted, but he seemed to delight in telling the news.
"And what happened to the first Death Star?"
Dalla said. Solo grinned.
"The Alliance blew it up, too."
Dalla was skeptical enough that she didn't believe him entirely. A prisoner would say anything, especially a defiant one like this. But in her gut, she feared it might be true, because it explained other things, such as the years of silence.
"And what about Grand Moff Tarkin?"
"He's in a billion atoms scattered across the Yavin system. He burned with his Death Star. He paid for the lives of all the people on Alderaan, a planet he destroyed."
"Alderaan is destroyed?"
Dalla raised her eyebrows. Kratos increased the power vibrating through the chair. Tiny pearls of sweat appeared on his own forehead. Dalla knew what the commander was thinking. During all these years of isolation, they had been assuming the Emperor would maintain his iron grip, that the fleet of all-powerful star destroyers and the secret Death Star would cement Imperial rule across the galaxy. The Old Republic had lasted 1,000 generations, and the Empire, could it have fallen in just a few decades?
"How long since the explosion of the second Death Star?"
7 years.
"What has happened since?"
Dalla finally sat down.
"Tell me everything."
But Solo seemed to gain inner strength and clammed up. He glared with his dark, angry eyes. Dalla sighed. It was like a rehearsed show they had to perform. Kratos adjusted the controls until Solo's entire body was a writhing, spasming mass of twitching muscles, as if a storm were happening inside his body. Gradually, the prisoner spilled the entire story of the other battles, the Civil War, Grand Admiral Thrawn, the resurrected Emperor, the truce at Bacara, the terrible conflicts in which the waning Empire had been defeated again and again, until finally she had Kratos release him. The loud humming of the chair suddenly stopped, and Han Solo slumped into exhausted bliss at being freed from the onslaught of his own muscles. Dalla motioned outside the door of the holding cell, summoning a glossy black interrogation droid that floated in with hypodermic needles glistening like spears in the dim reddish light. Solo tried to cringe back, and Dalla could see the fear in his eyes.
"There," Dalla said. "Now the interrogator droid will confirm everything you told us."
She got up and left. Later, she had found out that Solo was indeed telling the truth in everything he said. Alone in her quarters, Admiral Dalla switched off the recording. Her head pounded with a gnawing, throbbing ache like dull fingernails scraping the inside of her skull. One of the Maw installation scientists, learning that the new prisoner had actually been on board the completed Death Star, demanded to speak with him. Dalla would send the scientist this interrogation report. After she edited it, of course. Sometimes it was impossible to keep these prima donna scientists happy. They had such a narrow view of things. Right now, Dalla had greater worries. She had to decide what to do with this new information. In her quarters, Dalla stood between two full-length curved mirrors that projected a reflection of her body, head to toe. Her olive-gray uniform showed no wrinkle, only crisp creases and near-invisible seams. Through a strict regimen of exercises and drills, she had not added a fraction to her weight during her long assignment. Her appearance, though older and harder now, still pleased her. Dalla wore her bright admiral's insignia proudly over her left breast, a row of 6 scarlet rectangles set above a row of blue rectangles. To her knowledge, she was the only woman ever to wear such a rank in the Imperial Navy. It had been a special promotion given directly by Grand Moff Tarkin himself, and it was possible the Emperor did not even know of it. He certainly did not know about the Maw installation. Her coppery hair flowed over her shoulders, rippled down her back to below her hips. More than a decade ago, Dalla had arrived at Maw installation with her hair cropped short and bristly, part of the humiliation the Imperial Military Academy inflicted upon female candidates. After being sealed inside the Maw, though, Dalla was placed in charge by direct order from Tarkin. Asinine regulations for the sake of regulations meant nothing to her anymore. She refused to cut her hair as a gesture of her own independence. Rank had its privileges. She felt Tarkin would have approved, but Tarkin was dead now. Turning, she dimmed the lights, then activated the door. Outside, two bodyguards snapped to attention and continued staring ahead. Despite Maw installation's isolation, Dalla insisted on peak performance, regular drills, wargaming sessions. She had been trained in the Imperial military mold. Though the system had done its best to squash her ambitions, Dalla followed its tenets. Beneath their armor, the two guards were well-built and attractive, but Dalla had not taken a lover since Grand Moff Tarkin. After him, fantasizing had been enough. "Escort me to the shuttle bay," she said, stepping into the corridor. "I'm going down to the installation." She strode off, hearing the bodyguards march behind her, weapons ready. "Inform the duty commander that I have a meeting with Tal Sivran," one of the bodyguards muttered into his helmet comlink. She strode down the corridors, pondering the complexity of her ship, the troops, the support personnel. In the Imperial fleet, a single Star Destroyer housed 37,000 crew and 9,700 troops. But because of the secrecy of the Maw installation, Tarkin had assigned her only a skeleton crew, people without families, without connections to the outside, some recruited from worlds devastated by the early battles of the Empire. Even under rigid discipline, though, her crew had been trapped here for 11 years with no furloughs, no R&R other than the meager amusement of facilities available on board. Her troops had grown weary of the entertainment libraries, restless, bored, and angry at being placed on standby alert for so long without word from the outside. They were well-armed and itching to go out and do something, as was Dalla herself. At her fingertips, Dalla had the might of 60 turbolaser batteries, 60 ion cannons, and 10 tractor beam projectors, one of which had just been used to capture the battered Imperial shuttle. Inside the hangar bays, the Gorgon alone carried 6 TIE fighter squadrons, 2 Gamma-class assault shuttles, 20 AT-AT walkers, and 30 AT-SAT scout walkers. 3 more identical ships, the Manticore, the Basilisk, and the Hydra, orbited Maw installation, also under Dalla's command. Years ago, Moff Tarkin had taken Dalla herself to the Kuat drive yards to watch her 4 Star Destroyers under construction. Tarkin and Dalla had flown a small inspection shuttle around the enormous superstructures being assembled in orbit. The two remained silent for the most part, staring at the enormity of the project. Around them in space, the tiny lights of workers, transport vessels, rubble smelters, and girder extruders made a hive of activity. Tarkin had placed a hand on her shoulders, squeezing with a grip made of steel cords. "Dalla," he said, "I am giving you enough power to turn any planet to slag." Now, aboard the Star Destroyer Gorgon, Admiral Dalla entered a personnel lift that took her and her bodyguards from the command quarters below the bridge tower to one of the hangar bays. She did not announce her arrival when the doors slid open. Dalla was pleased to see her troops bustling about the TIE fighters, the shuttles, and service vehicles. After so many years of boredom, her personnel kept every system functioning perfectly. Only months after the completion of Maw installation, Dalla had noticed a malaise creeping through the personnel. Part of it was because of her, she was sure. Commanded by the only female flag officer assigned to babysit a bunch of scientists in the most protected spot in the galaxy, the troops had grown lax. But a few graphic executions and continual threats kept Dalla's crew constantly on edge, honing their skills and making it inconceivable for them to shirk their duties. That tactic had been one of Tarkin's prime lessons. Command through the fear of force rather than force itself. Dalla had 180,000 people at her disposal, not counting the weapons designers in Maw installation itself. She did not want to waste them. She glanced up and down the hangar, her molten metal hair trailing behind her. Inside an electromagnetic cage that shielded the entire vessel, technicians scoured the battered Imperial shuttle Endor that had been brought in by the new captives.
Endor? What kind of name was that?
She had never heard the term before. The technicians would be checking for service markings, locator beacons, and course log files. For a moment, Dalla considered taking the battered shuttle itself down to Tal Sivran, the chief scientist of Maw Installation. The effect would probably shock him into paying attention to her for once, but that would be a childish gesture. She let the technicians continue their work and chose instead the Imperial Shuttle Edict.
I can pilot this myself, she said to her bodyguards. Leave me.
On the flight down, she wanted time alone. She knew what Sivran would say on hearing the news, but this time she would not let him get away with it. The bodyguards dropped back and to the side as Dalla stepped up the ramp into the shuttle. She moved with quick, habitual movements, powering up the engines, running through the automated checklist. She mounted the headset nodes to her temple and to her ear, listening to her course vector as she raised the edict from its pad and arrowed it out through the magnetic shields that closed off the hangar bay from the vacuum of space. Surrounding her was the colorful, deadly shell of gases swirling into the endless gullets of black holes. Below hung Maw Installation itself, a cluster of planetoids crammed at the exact center of the gravitational island. The surfaces of the barren rocks touched in some places, grinding together. Immense bridges and bands held the asteroids in place. Access tubes and transit rails connected the cluster of drifting rocks. Under Grand Moff Tarkin's direction, Imperial constructors had ferried the rocks across space and through the obstacle course into the Maw. The insides of the asteroids were hollowed out into habitation chambers, laboratory areas, prototype assembly bays, and meeting halls.
If we present the citizens with a weapon so powerful, so immense as to defy all conceivable attack against it, a weapon invulnerable and invincible in battle, that shall become the symbol for the Empire.
Dalla had read a draft of the communique Tarkin had sent to the Emperor urging the creation of superweapons.
We may need only a handful of these weapons to subjugate thousands of worlds, each containing millions upon millions of beings. Such a weapon must have force great enough to dispatch an entire system, and the fear it shall inspire will be great enough for you to rule the galaxy unchallenged.
After getting permission for his scheme, Tarkin had used his new authority as Grand Moff